in these new laws, and as part of that campaign, they want to say, we tried zillions of police officers and it didn't work, that's why we need new laws. This proposal to outlaw sitting and lying is actually on the agenda for the city council meeting this coming Tuesday, and I believe that that is what all of this, all of what's going on now is really about, is a political agenda to make new laws, to basically criminalize people. And although the proposal says you get a citation and you don't get arrested, people who are poor are not going to be able to pay the citations, and they're going to end up going to jail on bench warrants for not paying the citations. So it's really a campaign to criminalize people who are poor, people who are young, people who come to Telegraph to hang out on the avenue. And I strongly oppose it, and anybody who agrees with that, I hope they come to the city council meeting next Tuesday and oppose these new repressive laws of outlawing sitting and lying. In terms of police presence, every time that the more conservative people propose these ordinances, I am guilty, and I'm sure to some people in the audience, of saying we should have more. If we can't enforce the laws that we have with the current amount of police presence, we should have more police so that they can enforce the negative against the negative behaviors that are a serious problem.
So what Worthington is saying all sounds very reasonable, and he, in fact, is issuing an important call for people to come to the Berkeley City Council meeting on Tuesday the 7th. And again, I invite you to consider doing that. Consider going up to Berkeley to defend the rights of the homeless up there on the 7th of July. That's Tuesday at town clock at 4:30. We also need vehicles. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. However, what Worthington is also not saying is that he had no problem in voting money for this new program, allegedly so that people could, this was supposedly to head off anti-homeless laws, so that he could show that he was a trooper and supporting more money for the police who enforce existing laws. And then suddenly when he learned, and that was only a few days ago, that the conservatives had gotten a liberal out of the majority, so they now had a majority to pass the anti-sitting law, and they were suddenly coming forward with an anti-sitting law, he realized that he had been bamboozled. Now, the best thing to do to me for my money would have been to be honest about it and say, hey, I screwed up. I should never have given money to this program. I should have spoken out the moment police misconduct started happening, as it did starting June 15th when the police program began. It was a program that ran from June 15th, scheduled to run until July 15th. In fact, he could have presumably held a press conference and said, I want this to end. He could have called the city manager and say, you know, take these people out of my district, since it wasn't voted by a city council action, but was done by a sort of private action by the city manager. He did none of these things. He remained quiet, perhaps hoping that he could, you know, influence them quietly or something, although he did not tell us he was engaging in any such influence. He just told us he was gathering information when we talked to him a couple weeks back. Then when he heard that this anti-sitting law was coming onto the books, he became very upset and very concerned, and suddenly wanted to mobilize all the radicals against this anti-sitting law, as he should. I mean, it's a good idea, and I think we should all mobilize against it. But he didn't recognize that he played a significant part in allowing this process to go on by voting the money for this little experiment of cracking down in the first place. So let's hear a little bit more, and then let's hear from some of the eloquent critics of this policy, who are much more sincere, unfortunately, than he is, in the sense that they aren't concealing or covering up their part in the process.
People blocking the sidewalk, people assaulting people, and the things that I talked about regarding Commissioner DeBose's questions. I believe that those laws seriously need to be enforced. And if we can't do it with the regular number of police, I support having more police. That's probably not all that popular in this room, but I support that if that's what it takes to enforce those laws. I strongly oppose having a whole bunch of new laws concocted to outlaw a bunch of other behavior. And the real solutions, the people who are proposing these laws are not thinking of practical solutions. Outlawing sitting and lying is not going to deal with the problem of someone who's mentally ill and acting out. They'll be standing up and doing it instead of sitting down and doing it, but it's not going to fix that problem. People who need a detox program are not, their problems are not going to be fixed by outlawing them sitting on the sidewalk. People who are young and coming to Telegraph because it's a fun and exciting place actually spend money on Telegraph while they're here, and chasing them away by outlawing sitting on the sidewalk isn't going to solve the problems either. So I think we need to keep our eye on what is the real political motivation going on, and it's creating a sitting and lying ordinance, and that I believe we should all oppose that. And if people who agree, or even if you disagree, you should let the city council know that. At the same time, as I passionately oppose that, I do support a coordinated approach between the Public Works Department, the Police Department, Health and Human Services, and this proposal that we have to create a community health and safety team to do crisis intervention, deal with mental health issues, substance abuse issues, to be a proactive presence on the street to deal with problem situations so that you don't need to have a large number of police.
All of which sounds very well theoretically, but doesn't take into account at all what has been happening the last 3 weeks in Berkeley. That's the problem with this kind of rhetoric. It does not take into account the fact that all those services were multiplied and focused on Telegraph Avenue with the intention of harassing and dispersing young people and homeless people up there. And he has no solutions to that, other than, I suppose, now belatedly coming out against it. He doesn't acknowledge his role in this position. But again, I've harped on this perhaps too much. Let's hear how he concludes, and then let's hear some of the audience comment.
You have a positive presence there that can deal with problem situations. It's not a replacement for the regular police, but it's an additional eyes and ears that is more of a social worker mentality to help the people, and to also talk to business owners or vendors or property owners. If they have a complaint, they can talk to the community health and safety team and try to get them to fix the problem. I think having this positive presence on the street is far more of a Berkeley-style solution to these problems than having 100 police officers or 100 fancy toilets or 100 new laws. Whatever, I mean, after they find out outlawing sitting and lying isn't going to solve the problems, then they'll say, well, let's outlaw something else, and they'll just keep making more and more laws. I don't think that's constructive. I think we need to do the things that the majority of the council has supported, the community health and safety team, supporting the youth center, getting a youth shelter, a detox, mental health services, and although some people find it controversial, I believe cleaning the streets and sidewalks is a positive step. Not cleaning the streets of people sitting there, but we have to coordinate a schedule so that we do.
How about cleaning the police department of the top leadership that is enforcing these kinds of policies, cleaning out the city manager's office of people who are taking decisions that violate the basic will of the council majority, which is not to harass people for sitting down. It's got to be said also, and I've mentioned this on the show before, that Berkeley Police Department has for years harassed homeless people using whatever ordinances they can around the issue of sitting. So for instance, in the early 90s when there was no sitting ban, they used a no furniture on the sidewalk ordinance to go after human people. Well, how they could do this is an interesting question, and eventually some of those cases which were challenged were thrown out, and there was a sting operation done by homeless activists David Nadell and Carol Denny at that time. Then when the sitting ban went into effect and was quickly put on hold by the courts, the police continued to harass people, claiming that it was still the law. When the sitting ban was overturned by the city council, they would go from person to person telling people, I'll have to ask you to move. Saying it in that fashion, what they really meant was, if the issue were drawn technically to their attention, oh, I wasn't telling him to move, I was asking him to move. So they weren't. But in fact, in that tone of voice, it constituted a demand that people move. When young people were informed of their right not to move, then they moved in this new Operation Avenue Watch and started spraying people down, going after their dogs, harassing them with mental health workers, and doing similar kinds of activities. People have to unite and support Berkeley activists who are trying to stop this new anti-homeless law in Berkeley. But it's not just the law. It has to be an attack on the practices of the police department, and there has to be some watchdog operation that really, that really assesses what's going on that is inappropriate in terms of police conduct, in terms of merchant favoritism, and then deals with it. Until that happens, all this babble about laws back and forth is sort of legalistic chatter. It doesn't really reach the issues on the street and the people who are being harassed on the street. Let's pause now for a little bit of comedy from the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe, a fine group which came out of Free Radio Berkeley, which one hopes will soon come on the air again. There have been mutterings about that. There's been talk of a 4th of July transmission from San Francisco by San Francisco Liberation Radio and Food Not Bombs. We don't know if that's actually going to happen. But here's a little bit of satire that might cheer us up.
One curious aspect of the current Federal Communications Commission is its seeming arbitrary assignment of uncollectible fines to people accused of broadcasting without licenses. How does the FCC structure its fines? Is there actually some kind of system? To find out, we asked an FCC agent shivering in a van, frantically twisting dials outside the suspected location of a pirate broadcaster. Mr. FCC agent, is there actually some kind of system?
Of course we have a system. It's just too complicated for lay people to understand. We take the average daily temperature, divided by the current interest rate, factor in the price of gasoline, premium gasoline that is, and then multiply by 14% of the amount of people who voted in the latest mayoral election, according to the municipality of the radio pirate in question, subtract 29, and there you have it, a rational, objective formula for the assignment of fines to pirate radio broadcasters.
I see. Was this method always used for assigning fines?
No, we used to use a dartboard and a blindfold, but it was suggested to us that this might be perceived as somewhat arbitrary. Being good public servants, we began a course of serious study with renowned experts to refine this method.
Hmm. What other methods have been used?
Well, for a few years, we experimented with an FCC secretarial pool lottery system, after which we moved to a more complicated formula based on the third horse race, Santa Anita. Then for several months, we relied on adding up the numbers of the first 40 license plates through the Bay Bridge toll plaza at midnight. These, of course, are valuable indicators, but we believe our current methods offer a truly scientific rationale.
Will the FCC be further improving its current fine selection method?
Well, we take our duty to discourage pirate broadcasting extremely seriously. So, despite the fact that we have no way of actually collecting any of these fines, we tirelessly continue to experiment with fine structures, hoping that someday the pirate broadcasters will surrender their headphones in defeat. Our latest experiments involve an inverse ratio of atmospheric negative ions to salt content in canned soup, carefully factoring in other numerical indicators such as football scores and stock prices. The American people can be proud.
Of course. We have been listening to an FCC field agent explaining the creative aspects of the FCC fine structure. Back to you in the studio.
And that was the Jolly Roger Comedy Troupe for your entertainment and edification. And now a bit of music to fill the gap. Actually, I think what we'll do while I cue up the some of the fine testimony of the Police Review Commission last night is a little bit of testimony from Prescott, Arizona. Not really testimony, but, the testimony of experience, you might say. This is a person we talked to in a public park in Prescott.
Okay, well, we are in front of, what do we call this area?
Square, in the Courthouse Square.
Courthouse Square in Prescott, Arizona, talking to
Kenneth Williams.
Kenneth, you say you're not homeless now, but you may soon be.
Yes, in a couple of days I'll be out of rent and out of a place to stay and no work.
What is that because you're just one of those lazy welfare bums we've heard so much about?
Sort of, because I live in this town. There's not much employment in this town, not too many people looking for people to put you to work in this town.
What's the main industry here in Prescott?
It's mostly landscaping and just the businesses you see around here, landscaping and home improvement type jobs.
Are you a native, or you just get into town?
I am a native. Some consider me a native, I guess, because I've lived here 11 years, but I'm a local, I know that, yeah.
And how are poor and homeless people treated in Prescott any differently than anywhere else, or any comments on that?
They're treated a lot better. In my instances of experience, they're treated a lot better with in regards to, you know, the older people. There's a lot of those around, and they just seem to kind of shuffle it off, I guess.
So, have you used any of the free food services here?
Yeah, they are available, and they are here.
How do they treat you in the free food service?
It's with respect, and you know, they help you out with whatever they can. They don't discriminate. They don't come down on you in any way that I know of.
What if you were to try to sleep, let's say, in your vehicle or in a public area somewhere, let's say off to the side, but still public?
Public, it's been known to happen, and it's been one of the suggestions even from the police that they'll tell you, go ahead and find a vehicle to sleep in or a friend's house to stay over at, and things like that are some of the suggestions that I've gotten, not only from them, but through experience.
Wow. So you've lived here for how long?
11 years.
And what kind of work do you do?
I'm a landscaper and a wood hauler right now. I do landscaping.
And you are looking at lean times coming up, huh?
Yeah, a few lean times coming up, yes, sir.
Have you been homeless on the streets of this city before? Or?
Yes, I have, and it's a very manageable thing. It's okay. Yeah.
Is the city got a lot of out-of-town homeless or not?
Sometimes it fluctuates. They'll come in from the different areas because this is one of the better areas to have a homeless existence, yeah.
Is that good or bad?
That's a good thing, yeah.
And what do you think makes this a town where you like to be? Or is this a town where you like to be?
It is, and it is. It's a town where I like to be because of who I know and where I go, but it's a town where I don't like to be because there's not that much really going on as compared to where I've been and experienced there.
Is your profession also your avocation? I mean, is it something you like to do, or do you consider what you want to do something different than the kind of work you do to survive?
I prefer a good, healthy job, something where I can do a little BA, bust the ass, but that's just my choice. I used to model for Soloflex.
What is Soloflex?
Soloflex workout machines. You see them on TV. They wanted me to be their model because I was in such good shape, and that was because I worked hard after the military and after Job Corps. I was in such good health, such good shape, and took good care of myself, plus I look good. And they wanted me to model for them. That was a long time ago, and I've got a lot of interesting history behind me, I guess, yeah.
And this was here in Prescott?
This was in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And so you're from the East originally?
Originally, I'm from Arlington, Texas.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So you've been around a lot?
Quite a while, yeah. 31 years off and on. I lived in Alaska for 5 years. That was really cool.
So, have you got a vehicle? Are you going to crash in your vehicle once you, if you are homeless, or what's your situation?
No, but me and my roommate are working on a few things to get us to an individual type area, a low plateau, you know, a better plateau.
Anything you want to say to those free radio people out there?
Free radio rules, and so does the rock and roll in Arizona, and come on down if you're homeless and you need a bite to eat. We love you.
Well, are there free radio stations here, that is to say, unlicensed stations?
There was a Channel 13 that me and my brother were running. We were doing camera operations and putting some live video on, not live, but recorded video on Channel 13 here in town via the college. And that was pretty interesting.
What about medical marijuana in Arizona? How is that?
It's been known through word of mouth and passed down to me that it is being used by some...
I mean, is there, for example, an open club here in Prescott that is tolerated by the authorities?
Not that I know of, no. Nothing really in existence like that here, no.
A brief update from Prescott. Actually, not quite the speaker I was thinking was going to be on. We've also been following in the last few months, the case of the situation around the Beach Flats redevelopment, or rather Canfield's Delight, as we call it, the City Council's planned sellout of the Beach Flats to the Boardwalk. Here's the latest update from that before we run out of time, since we only have 10 minutes left on Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Okay, we are on the phone with community activist Phil Bear, and sometime City Council candidate. Hi, Phil.
Howdy, Robert.
And Phil, what's the scoop? Beach Flats Working Group has been trying to educate the public and, I guess, prepare some kind of information for the public in contradistinction to the city council's rush to passage or rush to giveaway on the beach flats redevelopment plan. And there was a meeting last night. You want to give us the update?
Well, it was very encouraging at the room with a number of new people who had been there before. Every meeting is better attended than the one before. And we're now sort of breaking up into subcommittees along education, community outreach is one, a legal approach is a second, money making to pay for the legal approach is the third, and there is the start of a preparation for a possible referendum, assuming, as we do, that the council will in fact pass this plan in spite of its numerous documented inadequacies. So
quite a lot of
branching
public,
out. And,
quite a lot of public opposition as well, right?
Oh, yes. As people find out, as they approach the matter, the average person is not really aware of either the scope or the nature of what's being proposed. And a lot of those people, when they are given some sense of just how important a proposal this is, respond with a certain sense of disbelief and don't care for the idea. It's seen as, you know, we got all these people in Santa Cruz who came here fleeing some other city that got overdeveloped right out from under them. Talking to a couple last night from Vancouver, said that Vancouver went from a reasonable place to, you know, big city, tall building, anonymous urban blight in a matter of 5 years. And here, as their last refuge, their last hope of getting in at a point where they can prevent that from happening.
Now, how many people do you estimate attended the last meeting last night?
Last night must have been about 25 to 30.
And when's the next meeting scheduled for?
Monday.
And where will that be?
Same place, Environmental Center.
Which is?
Downtown. Well, what is it? Center Street.
Near India Joe's?
Yes.
Across from the Java House?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And that's at what time?
7.
That's 7 o'clock on Monday, the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, I guess it is, huh?
Could be. I don't have my calendar.
Yeah, it looks like the 6th.
Could be.
You know, there's been some talk among in the scan inner circles of a recall of Councilmember Mike Rotkin. What's your feeling about that?
I've heard the talk. I don't know how much momentum there is in that respect. I've heard that talk with regard to a couple of council members whose first names are Mike. Whether or not it will go anywhere, I really don't know at this point, but my general sense is that a counter-revolution happened within Santa Cruz politics sometime between the earthquake and now, and people are just getting wind of it, of how 20 years of slow growth policy got shifted with the earthquake into damn near anything goes approach to development, and people are just realizing that this development thing that we unleashed in the name of recovering from the earthquake has become a Frankenstein monster that we can no longer control, and are ready to do something of a fairly dramatic nature like a recall in order to try to get back to the status quo of what they view Santa Cruz as being all about.
What's your feeling about the prospects of a recall, both the success and also do you think that you and your organization would be interested in contributing to that effort?
Well, I can't speak on behalf of the organization, of course, nor can I really speak to the likelihood of success. You know, these days, I, like you, run within a circle of a particular viewpoint, and the degree to which it's characteristic of the larger population remains to be seen. I assume that there are a few people out there somewhere who are still loyalists to this so-called council majority, but everybody I'm talking to these days, I just feel absolutely betrayed and outraged and ready to dump them.
There's a city council meeting tonight. Are you going to be attending it?
I don't know. I've got to figure out what in the world, if anything...
I think it mainly has to do with setting the election guidelines for November, although I and David Silva will be there talking about Don't Sleep Tonight night, which, as you may or may not know, was the night in solidarity with the homeless that happened last night where
right.
we stayed awake because homeless people have to stay awake. And
actually, right.
I didn't make it. I fell asleep at 5. But
no, that's a good try.
It's kind of hard to do. The night gets colder and...
Oh, yeah, right. Well, you just, any attempt in that direction does nothing but increase your empathy for those people who have to be doing that stuff.
You know, Phil, this is really a change for you. I remember in 1988 debating you around the issue of the sleeping ban. I think you were somewhat concerned about... actually, a proponent of the sleeping ban in those days.
No.
No, am I wrong about that?
Yes, sir.
Okay, well, correct me on that.
People should be allowed to sleep. It would take something of an ogre, it seems to me, to reach some conclusion other than that one.
Wow, well, that's good to hear. I'm going to have to revisit my writings of those days. It was quite a hot election in 1988, as you may remember.
Yes.
And, you know, we had Jane Imler running.
Yes.
And, of course, we had Don Lane.
Yes.
And we had the precursor to Catherine Byers, who was that clown who did the Valentine to Scotts Valley and Steve Hartman. Mo Reisch.
Mo Reisch. There's a legendary figure.
Right.
Jane Yokoyama.
Jane Hokimama, as I
Hokimama,
call her.
Hokimama, right. A number of people. Steve Hartman.
Yeah, it was quite an election. Of course, these were the days when homeless people came in by the dozens. The city council meeting to seek some kind of redress.
Right, some lively city council meetings. City council meetings have become like mourning rituals. M-O-U-R and very dead these days. That's
like one
of the indications of just how misguided the current city...
So funeral services for democracy.
Exactly. The public, and that's the most staggering reality of all in this, is the degree to which this insurgency that took over the city council has blunted public participation to the point where what I witnessed 15 years of lively, you know, maybe you agree or maybe you don't agree, but the city council meetings were at least lively and entertaining and crowded. Now you go to a city council meeting and you assume that whomever died was a very unpopular person.
Right, frequently that is the case, although we do have the media coming out in droves to see the fluoride debate.
Yes, right, right. There's a hot issue for you, yawn.
Well, Phil, is there anything else coming up other than next Monday night's meeting of the Beach Flats Working Group at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock?
7.
7 o'clock at the Environmental Center near India Joe's restaurant downtown that we should know about.
Well, my understanding is that it is already assumed that the final EIR for the BSOL plan will be ready by mid-September, at which time there will be two public meetings on the 15th and the 16th, at which time it is presumed that it will be approved, and the final passage of the entire BSOL plan will be, I believe, October 21st, as they race to beat the November election.
And again, for those who don't know, or have been, shall we say, elsewhere, while this whole matter has been discussed, we're talking about a multi-million dollar plan that I have called, and I guess perhaps others have called, a giveaway to Charlie Canfield and the Seaside Company that would increase traffic and dramatically remove housing from the beach flats, and what, fund a conference center as well?
Numerous plans. It would take 5 minutes to do even the most bare-boned synopsis of it. It is an extraordinarily elaborate $400 million plan, $200 million directly from the public sector, $200 million, which they don't seem to have, and $200 million from the private sector. That's over a 20-year period. Very complicated. Increased population, increased traffic dramatically, decreased air quality, significant increase to our water supply, just a big chunk of growth.
And for folks who want to know more about this plan, can you give us a couple of phone numbers they can call?
423-0170.
423-0170.
And that's it for Bathroom Spears Broadsides tonight. We're going to go out, whoops, on a very quick, brief segment of... well, a song you heard last show by Carol Denny. She hasn't yet hit the album with it, but you get to hear it. Tune in on Sunday, 11 o'clock. We'll be coming back with Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Stay tuned for
Uncle Jack.
Stand in
for Uncle Dennis.
It's the sit-in for Uncle Dennis. He's sitting in until people kick him out, but he's here. But in the meantime, stay ready. Stay by your phones. And if you hear the FCC is down here, come on down with your cameras. Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrob Spears Broadside, signing off until Sunday at 11.
They'll arrest you and throw you in jail. Tap all your phones and they jack up your bill. But they're so in love, they can't get you out of their mind. They're watching your house and they follow your car. They're tracking your movements wherever you are. But they're so in love, they can't get you out of their mind. Your name's in the paper about every day, and you're quoted as saying stuff you never say. And you're suddenly charged with a whole lot of crimes. Have to make court dates a whole lot of times. It's because they're in love. What else could it possibly be? It happens because they're in love with you, the way they're all in love with me.
Harry Truman, Doris Day, Red China, Johnny Ray, Sapphic, Walter Winchell, Joe.
Next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, Bathrob Spears Broadsides. 2.5 hours of you and lots of movies. Civil rights for poor in Santa Cruz on Free Radio Santa Cruz. Stay tuned.
The King and I and the Catcher in the Rye. Eisenhower vaccine. England's got a new queen. Capiano, Liberace, Sapphire, and
with us here on 96.3, and hopefully you can be with us on the phone lines as well. We have open phone lines, and our phone line in is 423-5361. That again is 423-5361. So call us if you want to be a part of this show, our twice a week foray into basic civil rights for poor and homeless people on the streets.
We also cover topics around the drug war, around the issues of medical marijuana, and just national civil liberties issues as well. But we tend to focus on civil rights for the poor here. That's me and my beautiful mic here. So stay with us and join us. Again, phone lines are 423-5361. We're going to be covering a lot of things today. The Seattle tent city and the imminent police attack on that tent city, Berkeley's anti-sitting ordinance, and the upcoming Tuesday city council meeting, when some of us will be going up to Berkeley to support the rights of poor people to non-obstructively sit on the sidewalk without being arrested for doing so. That's the latest ploy of the conservative, apparently the conservative majority of city council, since I guess they think they have the votes. We're also going to be listening to interviews from Arizona, the update from San Francisco. We're going to have an update from Seattle on the tent city, a brief one from a couple of nights ago. We haven't been able to get a more recent update, and that seems to be a developing crisis. We'll be following up on San Diego, where, as we've mentioned in the past, there's more than 150 people there every night in front of San Diego City Hall, sleeping, and have been for 3 months in a makeshift, self-managed, peaceful encampment. We're also going to be reading you an update from Fort Lauderdale, where there has been an official tent city since 1993, Mike Rodkin notwithstanding. So do stay with us. Let's begin, however, with the subject nearest and dearest to our hearts, namely free radio itself. Free radio, as you know, here in Santa Cruz, has been under attack. We had a visit from the FCC in May before the infamous Berkeley ruling that closed down the Free Radio Berkeley station. We have continued to stay open here, although with all our alert lights on, all our sensors ready, and essentially we're not really necessarily anticipating a raid, but it could come at any time, and we are trying to prepare for that possibility. But so far we are bringing you the news, bringing you the community feelings, bringing you an opportunity to be a part of this dialogue 24 hours a day. In fact, even as I'm speaking, I'm getting a telephone call. Let's see who that is. Well, looks like we're having those old phone blues again. I'm sorry, caller. When I pick up the phone, I'm just getting a no tone. I'm just getting you continuing to ring, so I'm going to work on that. While I am, however, we're going to play a little bit of an interview with Terrible Tom, a free radio specialist who's not only interested in helping Free Radio Santa Cruz, but has been all over the map talking about free radio stations. Let's hear what he has to say and get the update on free radio from him. What's the update on free radio, big boy?
Oh, I don't know. That cedar tree up there in Berkeley has been operating, I understand.
You're talking about Radio Cedar Tree, the Radio Free Berkeley pinch hitter up there after Radio Free Berkeley was closed
this
down?
Yeah, it has been on the air, I'm understanding, on Sunday evenings.
Mm-hmm.
Dogged away by the dogs,
woof, woof.
Agents' names I could give you, but I just didn't bother writing them down.
So they have been, should we say, broadcasting from a surreptitious hill, but then pursued by agents?
Apparently, in the process of trying to shut them down, the whole thing happened on the air live.
Mm-hmm.
And when the agents said you have to shut that down, and the people said we're not gonna, and it looked like it might get physical, the agents decided to sit down and write down complaint papers instead.
I see.
Which they handed out up there on the hill, you know.
So they didn't bring the federal marshals with them, eh?
No, there were two people. I
could have been the same two who came to Free Radio Santa Cruz in mid-May.
Otherwise, I don't know of any other significant harassments.
So, in other words, as far as you know, stations have not been shut down since the intimidation of...
One got shut down up around Minneapolis, somewhere in there. A small station got shut down.
Uh-huh. By court order or by intimidation?
No, they were involved in a court thing, and the FCC based their decision to shut it down on the Dunafer court order and in the rating that they put on the subject.
They actually got an injunction?
Yeah, they actually did a permanent injunction. They got a permanent injunction against the station, which is a new tactic, you know. I mean, it's only the second time it's been done.
Now, what about the alternate, the other side of the coin for Steal This Radio, let's say, in New York City, where they're fighting back to enjoin the FCC from harassing them?
That's a nice idea, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
But I'm not familiar with it other than to that point. And Radio Kind has been staying on the air big time.
What is Radio Kind?
Radio Kind is a big community station that's been told to shut down. And
where is it?
The council got involved in saying you better shut down, and the FCC and the mayor and everybody said to shut down. So during the last elections, they actually managed to swing it around and determine who the mayoral candidate is going to be. Mm-hmm. And they seriously affected the reactionary city council people.
What city was this, Tom?
It's in Texas, Austin or somewhere, I don't know.
Some city in Texas, huh?
City in Texas. They were broadcasting San Francisco Liberation Radio there in Texas and putting it on live. They have a 24-hour internet feed for real audio, so you can actually get it. But Edmondson has been going through them to have San Francisco Liberation Radio actually be on the air via their internet feed.
This is because San Francisco Liberation Radio, along with Free Radio Berkeley, I guess,
because the lawyers decided that San Francisco Liberation Radio was essentially covered by the FRB thing. Yeah.
The Free Radio Berkeley decision by Judge Claudia Wilkins,
which talked
join them.
Way about all these people who were in active concert with Duffer, meaning, you know, the people who, yeah.
Now, what about smaller stations? We know that a couple stations in the San Jose area were intimidated into closing.
Yeah.
By FCC agents essentially either contacting the landlords or kind of bullying their way into the stations. And I guess there was pressure on the Watsonville station. And Free Radio Monterey has been expressing its concerns to Free Radio Santa Cruz. Do you have any more news about the nearby stations?
Well, my understanding is the Watsonville station is temporarily off the air, but only temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
The San Jose Free Radio, Radio Free San Jose, actually it's called, broadcasting from downtown San Jose at 40 West, is just done a frequency change and decided that they want to be on the air, absolutely, and they're at 88.1 now, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Any news from a radio station south of the border, for example, in Chiapas and that area?
There are stations operating down there under extreme duress at the moment, but they do operate.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be mobile. They move from one hilltop to another, broadcasting to different little outlying valleys in different languages each time. The communities there take the radios very seriously, and they prepare programming for their day of the week when the radio comes around on its pole with its generators and all of that. And the villages simply scan their dials looking for the station to show up. The military tends to jam it so that it has to be retuned for frequency every few hours.
This is to avoid traveling government agents? And military?
Well, no, the military jammed the station.
Oh, I see.
They just plain jam it, and so when it gets jammed, they simply retune it, change frequency, and it takes the military a couple of hours to re-jam it at the new frequency. But it broadcasts in the various Highland Maya languages, Tupil and Bali and the like of that, and it's actually the only communication ever been available in their own languages or with any kind of input directly from the people.
And this is also the case in Guatemala?
In Guatemala there are stations operating on slightly different conditions in the north of the country. I'm not real familiar with what's going on.
Uh-huh.
Some attacks against them a year ago, and none of them closed down. One of them was burned out, but none of them closed down, and they're all on the air, to my knowledge. Yeah. I have to go.
All right, well, listen, Free Radio Santa Cruz thanks you for your update. And that was Terrible Tom, the radio man. While that report was going on micro-broadcasting radio or pirate radio or free radio, what do you want to call it, the
broadcasting under 100 watts. We got a phone call, which I think we are now able to take. So all you folks who have been dismayed, do call in to 423-5361. But here's our apparently incoming update.
I think we're talking to Skidmark Bob, free radio broadcaster, cop watcher, and full-time dad.
That's me. I was listening to that interview with Tom Schreiner. Interesting interview.
Mm-hmm.
Although no one's tried to jam us, we've had a few problems. But what I wanted to bring up is that right now, since we ourselves are coming under siege, although we haven't been attacked yet formally, we've been trying to get community support. So we're putting together a petition right now. I believe some of the programmers are putting together a petition to support free radio, so people will be circulating a petition somewhere near you. And also we were going to talk to the city council, see if they could make a resolution supporting us like they do for various other activities. And so our own Sister Snatch, who does a show on Thursday evenings, at 10 o'clock, she does lesbian, bisexual stuff on her show. She talked to Mike Rotkin, because she's a student at UCSC, and, just threw it out there to him to see if they would support him.
Mike Rotkin, of course, has been on the air on free radio a number of times discussing
yes,
and debating things like the sleeping ban.
Mm-hmm.
And we had thought that, he certainly likes to play to the public and seems to be willing to go public with his views. We'd hoped he would defend the radio station that help him get out there.
Yes, he's even come out and said that he supports us. I mean, verbally.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Snatch asked him if that would be possible to make a resolution supporting us, and he turned her down. He said that our illegal activity, the city council could not support illegal activity. Such as Free Radio Santa Cruz. But it's okay to make resolutions supporting Momia Abu-Jamal and Wham and all these other things that are so-called illegal activities.
It's interesting. We are not really engaging in illegal activity until we are so enjoined from doing so or so warned formally by the FCC. And in spite of sort of visits by the FCC, we have never received any formal papers about that.
No.
So as far as I'm concerned, I'm not engaging in any illegal activity at the moment. It might